does the future hold for hydraulic fracturing in the Canning Basin? This is a special forum with Vanessa Mills on ABC Kimberley.
The Canning Basin has the largest onshore petroleum resources in Australia. 10 billion barrels of oil are in its shale, 260 trillion cubic feet of gas, as well as coal and other minerals. Above the Canning Basin is the Great Sandy Desert, huge hills of ancient sand dunes, thick native bush, animals, birds and sacred sites. The basin extends under the towns of Broome, Derby and Fitzroy Crossing, all over the Dampier Peninsula and north into the Yampi training area. The Canning has long been isolated from development, but for the first time since it was formed 500 million years ago, the Canning Basin is on the cusp of change. The West Australian government currently gets $900 million in royalties from petroleum. That will plateau as offshore production moves into Commonwealth waters, but because shale gas resources are entirely within state boundaries, it will get a significant source of revenue, royalties being 10% of wellhead value. Because of shale's low permeability, it's hard to get the gas out. To stimulate the flow, chemicals, water and sand are pumped down into the well to fracture the rock up to 4 kilometres down. In the Canning Basin, hydraulic fracking has happened in 11 wells between 1950 and 2010. More are planned this year by Buru Energy on Roebuck Plains Station and north of Nookumbah, where there's the nearby Duchess Paradise coal project by Ray Resources. Fracking has been used since the late 1940s around the world, and it's also attracted a great deal of scrutiny and controversy. This morning on ABC Kimberley, we're looking at the Canning Basin's oil and gas resources and the use of hydraulic fracturing. In front of a live studio audience, we have Buru Energy's chief scientist, Dr. Damien Ogburn, and community relations, John Ford, Martin Pritchard, the director of Environs Kimberley, Dr. Phil Gorey, the Department of Mines and Energy head of the Environment Department. On the phone, Dr. Anne Paulina, an academic and Kimberley Aboriginal leader. In our Brisbane ABC studio, CSIRO's Dr. Peter Stone, a specialist in sustainable agriculture and its intersection with fracking in Queensland. The WA Department of Water declined an offer to be on this panel today, as did Yaru's native title body, Nyambaburu Yaru, Ray Resources and drilling specialist Halliburton. Damien Ogburn, what does Buru want to do this year at its Yularu Wells east of Broome and Vahalia Wells west of Fitzroy Crossing?
Good morning, Vanessa and listeners. The intention for Buru Energy this year is to undertake test programs on four existing exploration gas wells that we have at those four sites. It's a small hydraulic fracturing program in terms of testing. It's the first stage of what we hope to lead into a larger understanding of this resource. I would caution the fact that we are still very much early in the exploration stage. We need to prove that this resource is actually movable. So we understand that the gas and the oil is down in that shale, but whether or not this resource can actually be proven to be a commercial outcome is several stages away from where we are at this
stage. How much water will each well fracture use, and how will you store the wastewater that has the chemical fluids in it?
Okay, so the total amount of water that we will use for those four wells is 31 megalitres. That's about 15 Olympic-sized swimming pools, or 2 hectares of loosened irrigation on a crop, or 3 days of Broome Town water usage. That's for the four wells. It'll vary between the wells because there's different numbers of stages of hydraulic fracturing that are going to be undertaken at each of those wells, depending on the formation and the things that are down there that the geologists and reservoir specialists need to look at in terms of the test. In terms of storage, so this is the flowback water that comes back from the stimulation of the reservoir with the hydraulic fracturing process. The water that flows back, and that may be anywhere from 30 to 70% of the water that goes down there, goes into a triple-lined reservoir, so that's best practice in terms of an impermeable reservoir that can't leak and things like that. The water that comes back, we understand the characteristics of this from several of the previous analysis that we've done, including the drill cuttings that have come from these boreholes and the Yularu 2 small hydraulic fracture that Buru Energy undertook in 2010. So we've characterised the material in terms of what comes back, and to a large extent, but because this is still exploration, we'll be doing a lot of analysis of that. In terms of the storage on surface, we'll be monitoring that during the period that we're flowing back. That's called the period of flowback of water and the subsequent hopeful movement of gas upwards and the testing phase after that.
And if you can't reuse the water because of its chemistry, evaporation ponds are already banned in New South Wales and Queensland. What will you do with the excess?
These aren't evaporation ponds, they're storage reservoirs. Our intention at the end of the program is simply to put it back down in the formation from whence it came.
Dr. Phil Gorey from the Mines Department. Victoria's banned fracking until June 2015. New South Wales has implemented a prohibition on fracking near current and future residential zones, as well as increasing the rigour of coal seam gas projects proposed on agricultural land. Why is Western Australia allowing fracking?
So Western Australia's got, thanks certainly for the invite for being here this morning, Western Australia's got quite a history of onshore oil and gas development, which is somewhat different to some of the other states. Western Australia and the Department of Mines and Petroleum has been involved in regulating this industry for nearly 60 years. We've got quite a bit of onshore gas development. In fact, we've got, some of you might be aware, there's oil and gas fields north of Perth that have been operating as production fields for many years. So the situation in Western Australia versus the eastern states is somewhat different, particularly with the capacity within government. I think what is also important with Western Australia is the understanding that we have in regards to some of the geological formations where this oil and gas might actually exist is sometimes somewhat limited. To actually inform that that understanding actually requires some exploration activity. What we'd certainly be keen on doing is that judgments about any future proposals for oil and gas development is informed by a good understanding of the formations.
And is the science there yet, though? Do you have a good understanding?
So with the geological formations, there's a range of things that government gets involved in, that operators get involved in, and they actually go from the somewhat remote operations, so airborne geophysical developments or geophysical operations, seismic operations, and these are all processes that that geologists do and petroleum engineers do to build their understanding about the formations. That's really important because that will actually drive an understanding of where it might be appropriate to actually target drilling. The reality is, though, to fully understand some of these formations might actually require some drilling into them to really prove up the concept to do exploration.
How many wells will be required to fully develop the Canning gas field?
Oh, look, it really depends on what the initial understanding is of exploration. And the oil and gas industry, where you're moving into an area where it is generally new, there's not a complete understanding of geology, it is a incremental process. And
but are you talking 10 wells, 100 wells, 1,000 wells to realise the potential of the canning?
It's unclear at the moment.
So you don't know.
So it might be that the exploration actually finds that it is extremely difficult, or maybe extremely costly, or there's other limitations to accessing these reserves.
And do you know what impact fracturing would have on the hydrology of the canning?
So what we're really, really keen on doing is making sure that where the development, where the proposals are looking at going into, each of those proposals specifically look at the potential impacts on groundwater hydrology and all the surface environmental impacts as well. Because it is very, very difficult and something that as a regulator we're not keen to do is to rely on extrapolation of environmental impacts from somewhere else. We want to understand specifically what the environmental impacts will be of any proposal.
Martin Pritchard from Environs Kimberley, do we know enough of the biology, the ecology of the Canning Basin, its hydrology, to say yes or no to development?
We certainly don't. The Department of Water's report on the regional groundwater on the Dampier Peninsula highlights a number of significant knowledge gaps in terms of hydrology. There hasn't been a lot of work done at all in this part of the WA, in the Kimberley here. And we're very concerned that this lack of understanding could lead to some significant problems, including groundwater pollution through chemicals, particularly toxic chemicals that are used in the fracking process. We've seen concerns from all over the world. Cities like Fort Collins in Colorado, Cantabria, a region of Spain, France, Bulgaria have all banned fracking. Now, governments don't ban fracking for lightly. So there's serious environmental and public health concerns that we don't believe have been addressed. And we want to make sure that moving forward in the Kimberley, that we don't end up with a situation where our children and grandchildren are facing a toxic legacy from fracking.
Why do you think there is a risk of a toxic legacy? Why do you think there'll be water contamination issues?
We know from work that's been done in America that there's methane contamination happening in gas fields. So that's gas contaminating water. There's studies that have been done by research organisations over there. There's studies coming out monthly about problems in the US. We don't want a repeat of those problems here. There's also a particular incident in Wyoming where the US EPA originally said that, yes, they thought that fracking chemicals had contaminated an aquifer there. Unfortunately, for reasons that haven't been made clear yet, the US EPA were told to stop investigating and that the county of Wyoming was going to look into the problem itself, along with the fracking company in Canada. So we've got a significant conflict happening in the US, and when you look at stories that are coming out from places in the US where fracking is something that is huge, we're talking tens of thousands of wells, people talk about dead animals on their properties, children getting sick, people getting sick for various reasons, and we want to make sure that before an industry takes off, and it can take off very, very quickly, that we've got everything in place. And also, you know, the state government at the moment is conflicted. We've got the Department of Water, Department of Health, and the Water Corporation saying there should be no fracking in public drinking water supply. We've got the Department of Mines and Petroleum, which is playing catch-up. At the moment, it's looking at bringing in new regulations for fracking. So really, we're talking about a government that's behind the eight ball. And there's also a parliamentary inquiry happening into fracking at the moment, which will report to the government in sometime this year, hopefully, with some recommendations. So the government really doesn't have this evidence and the regulatory scheme in place to be able to control it properly. We want to make sure that that happens because, as far as we're concerned, we want the Kimberley to be healthy into the future.
Dr. Peter Stone from CSIRO, coming to you now from our studios at the ABC in Brisbane. Is there a need for scientific research specific to Western Australia conditions before a gas field is developed in the Canning?
Yeah, there's been over a million shale gas wells established around the world, and so there's a pretty good understanding of the sorts of risks that attend shale gas extraction, and the technology that's been proven abroad in those over a million wells will be applicable here. And so there's that central technology that relates to well drilling and completion and doing hydraulic fracturing itself, the gas production, and also the real-time sensing that's used to monitor and minimise risks will all be applicable in Australia. But some of those technologies and exploration models will need to be tailored to suit particular Australian geological, environmental, and also our economic conditions. So just as an example, hydraulic fractures in gas-bearing rock in the US, the fractures tend to go vertically. The evidence suggests that in some of the Australian basins that the fractures go horizontally. And so just really getting on top of some of those things in a site-specific way, it would be a good idea to get on top of that in Australia.
Dr. Stone, there are scientific papers done that say there's nothing to worry about with fracking, and there are scientific papers done that show there's a great deal to be concerned about. How is the public and the government to believe who was telling the truth?
ultimately, I think people will make up their own mind about which pieces of the evidence suit their argument, is often the case. Large reviews of, as I say, the over a million wells that have been done worldwide, if we look at water contamination, which is one of the concerns that people often raise, that can occur via a number of methods. It can occur via leaks of hydraulic fracture from a well, well failure, spills, leakage of the impoundment, so once the fluids come back out of the well, the little storages that's kept in, or traffic accidents while the fluid is being transported to the well site. And all the evidence suggests that actually the greatest risk is through a traffic accident. So the risks associated with the use of hydraulic fracturing fluid itself on the site are actually very low. And so the failure rate of wells such that they introduce hydraulic fracturing fluid to the environment is very low. It's often less than 0.02% of wells have a problem. And so if you're looking at the normal well density, that means that you may have leakage from a well into the environment roughly once every 3.5 million hectares at worst. So that's what the available evidence from reviews across all of the scientific literature tend to show.